listening to KDLG Dillingham, also heard on KNSA Unalakleet.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A major hurricane's bearing down on Louisiana for the second time in under 6 weeks. Hurricane Delta is now the 10th named storm to strike the continental U.S. this year. That's never happened before. At last check, Delta was a Category 2 with top sustained winds of 105 miles per hour. Governor John Bel Edwards is asking people to pray for his state, including for those living around Lake Charles.
All righty. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right, great. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the call-in COVID-19 panel discussion. We are joined here today by City Manager Todd Larson, Gina Carpenter with the Dillingham Public Health Center, Dr. Kira Ben-Dixon from BBAHC, and Thomas Tilden from the Chugyung Tribal Council. I'll go ahead and hand it over to you, Todd.
Okay, thanks, Tyler. Hello, everybody. Just wanted to have one of these radio shows. We've been doing panels throughout this time period with COVID and trying to communicate different things to you. And it turns out that this one just happened to be pretty timely based on some incidents. An incident happened yesterday, and I'm sure you'll have some questions. So we've got, as Tyler said, we have a few panelists here. We're going to have about a 5-7 minute spiel, and then we're going to open up for questions for all of you. We've got the medical folks online here, and please ask those important questions so we can get you some answers. From the city standpoint, we have emergency ordinances in place. The ones have been really in place since April, minus a few changes here and there. The travel form is still there. The protection plan is still there. The council saw the plan that was built by Pearson Consulting last Thursday, and they're going to look at that again on the 15th, and we have to have a two-meeting process to adopt something, and then it'll be considered for a vote on November 5th as currently the situation stands. So the city council did extend the current ordinances to November 5th to cover that time period while we get this other in place. excuse me. Some of the things that I just want to say, I guess I'll talk, I'm going to talk about some of the practical stuff. I got some information from the grocery stores. I wanted to make sure, because there's some people that are wondering if they're in quarantine, how do they get their groceries? We just got an update that AC is delivering Monday through Saturday. The groceries are delivered at 1 p.m. And day of grocery deliveries, call from 8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Then next day, call anytime after 1 p.m. So if you call before lunch, they'll get them to you that day. And if you call after lunch, they'll get them to you the next day. The other two, N&M has no deliveries at this time, but Big Fit, of course, carries the groceries out of your vehicle. So we just want to make sure you have some of those necessary things as we go into a few more quarantines here. We do have a couple health and safety monitors from Denali Universal Services through the CARES Act grant. They'll come here probably early next week. They'll do their 14-day quarantine, and then they'll be assisting at the airport with travelers and making sure people are wearing masks and know the rules here in town. And again, I'm going to cut my remarks very short here, but I just want to stress, folks, the only way this is going to work is if we help each other. And it's not a worn out saying at all. It's we've got to help each other get through this. We can't write laws. We can't do, that's not going to get people to comply too much. It's in your heart, and you got to help each other out. Just the motto is what can we do to help each other, that I'd like to press forward for everybody. So, I'll be available for questions later on. Thank you for your time today. And Dr. Ben Dixon, would you like to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Todd. And thank you to KDLG for having this session with us. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Kira Ben Dixon. I'm one of the full-time family medicine physicians here at BBHC. I am currently serving on the BBHC Incident Command Team as the medical branch director. I stepped down as the incident commander over a month ago, and Bernina Van Waugh has been doing a fantastic job, so I just want to acknowledge her. Firstly, I'd also like to recognize the continued efforts of our local community leaders and tribal leaders. You have all done an incredible job of remaining vigilant during this COVID-19 marathon. This has been a long and trying time for all of us, and there are just a few important reminders and clarification points that I'd like to share with all of you today. So firstly, we all know the signs and symptoms of COVID-19. As a reminder, these include commonly cough, fever, and sometimes shortness of breath. Less common symptoms are headache, runny nose, sore throat, sometimes loss of taste, sense of taste and or smell. Sometimes you can have or develop vomiting and or diarrhea. It is important to remember that these are all vague symptoms and can also be explained by other common diagnoses, such as the common cold, bacterial lung infections, or the flu, just to name a few. Due to the vagueness of COVID-19 symptoms, getting a COVID-19 test does not exempt you from any other possible diagnosis. So if you are continuing to have any of these symptoms, you should come to the walk-in clinic to be thoroughly evaluated by a medical provider. Secondly, COVID-19 testing has its limitations for a number of reasons. One limitation of testing is that the result of a COVID-19 test will only tell you if you are positive or negative for the COVID-19 virus at that single moment in time. This is related to the variable and prolonged incubation period of the virus. The incubation period begins after a person has become exposed to the virus and continues until symptoms develop. The incubation period for COVID-19 is pretty wide range. It's between 3 and 14 days. However, typically symptoms will develop 3 to 5 days after exposure. During this incubation period, there is a rapid replication of the COVID-19 virus, and typically the infected individual will remain without symptoms and will likely continue to test negative. Once the incubation period is over, the individual may develop symptoms and will then test positive. This is why a single negative COVID-19 test should not, under any circumstances, be used as a ticket to stop quarantine early. A negative COVID-19 test can give a false sense of security that a person does not have the virus. If they are tested during this incubation period, they are still infected, but just not yet testing positive for the virus. Which brings me to my next point, number 3. Quarantining is the best way to prevent exposure and spread of COVID-19, as this minimizes the amount of close contact that you have with people whom you do not live with. When returning from travel outside of Dillingham, this includes even a short weekend trip into Anchorage, it is imperative to follow the city ordinances and remain in quarantine for 14 days after arrival into Dillingham. While in quarantine, it is important to wash your hands often, wear your face coverings if you are in close contact with others, and try to stay 6 feet apart from others in your home. While in quarantine, you should not go to any stores, grocery stores, the hardware store, or the GCI store, for example. You should not go to other common gathering places or participate in group activities. Instead, call in your grocery orders for delivery. Have a friend get your mail and drop it off at the front door of your home. Do not attend social gatherings with people whom you do not live with. Lastly, I want to discuss this term, quote, false positive, which is a term I've been hearing spoken within the community. When talking about COVID-19 testing specifically, there is no such thing as a false positive. According to the CDC and the medical experts of the state of Alaska, there is no such thing as a false positive COVID-19 test. If a person tests positive for COVID-19 on any testing machine, they have COVID-19. They will be told to go into isolation for 10 days from the day the symptoms started or 10 days from the day they tested positive if they are without symptoms. The term false positive should be removed from discussion with regards to COVID-19 test results, as this is not a term that is acknowledged to be true. Additionally, if a person has a COVID-19 test, it is possible that they will continue to show a positive COVID-19 test result for up to 3 months after the initial positive test. I completely recognize that this was quite a bit of information that was crammed into a short period of time, but hopefully these reminders and clarifications will allow for improved understanding of why we have the recommendations we have in place. We are all very excited that the holiday season is rapidly approaching, with Halloween just around the corner, followed by Thanksgiving and Christmas. We all need to remain vigilant in our COVID-19 prevention and education during the upcoming holiday season. No bobbing for apples or social costume parties for Halloween this year. Instead, maybe watch scary movies at home or bake festive treats for your family. Be creative in ways to share the holiday spirit while maintaining social distancing, mask wearing, and washing hands frequently. Now is the time, just as Todd said, to not let our guard down as we are all running this COVID-19 marathon together. Thanks a lot, Todd.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Linda. I guess I should turn it back over to Tyler here. You're running the show, Tyler.
Who is speaking next?
Sorry, Tyler, I just jumped in there. Gina's ready to talk, I think.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Gina.
Hi. Hey, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gina Carpenter, and I'm the Dillingham Public Health Nurse. And so I just have a few points for what we're dealing with currently that we just want to remind folks that during this period where there's so much COVID infection traveling through Anchorage and the Mat-Su area, that if we have important social events or gatherings that need to be held, that we make sure that we are masking and maintaining social distance. Sometimes we might even have to consider that we would postpone some important social events like a wedding, just because the risk for spread among all of our groups that can go to the villages so quickly can occur. People can be infected with the virus that causes COVID-19 and not show any symptoms or even know that they are sick. And so for this reason, it's very important to keep social gatherings, if you do have them, very small. And if you gather with others, hold events outside and be masked and up to 6 feet apart from those outside your immediate family or household. And social gatherings are not advisable right now with our community spread occurring. But if you do gather, take these special precautions and limit time indoors. We do have a lot of information that we share with people. If they do need to be in quarantine, how does that look? It's pretty much what Dr. Ben Dixon has already shared with you. But we are trying to outreach some folks now from cases that people might be aware of or not. And we're just in this together, and we're going to get through it together. And we just want to not focus on any shame or blame. This is what we kind of knew would happen. So we'll get through it together, and we're here to provide any information that can help you. So thank you for listening, and just let us know. That's it. Thanks, Todd.
Is Tom Tilden on the phone? Okay,
thank you very much. Thank you also to the previous speakers at KDLG and to Todd for organizing this. Just recently, I was exposed to a positive person and had to go into quarantine. And so I was able to experience firsthand what it's like to be in that state. And I think it's, as Gina has pointed out, it's very, very important that we don't let our guard down, not even once, that we have to wear those masks. We have to social distance. We have to wash our hands. And we have to be considerate of others. You go through a lot of emotions when either you are affected or exposed and they're going to have some medical issues, don't hesitate in calling the hospital. Don't hesitate in calling a friend. Don't hesitate in calling your pastor. Make sure that you deal with that because your mind is going to roam quite a bit. Do physical exercise. Walk. Get outdoors. Do some yard work. Do some subsistence work. But make sure that you stay physically active. If you have financial issues, call. Call BB&A. Call the city. Call the tribe. Call the banks. Call the people that you owe money to. If you have food issues, BB&A has a food bank. The tribe might be able to help you. Call friends. Call the city. There's going to be a lot of worries. There's going to be a lot of fears. And there's going to be a lot of grief. But we can get through this. We have to get through this. And it's not going to be easy. No business is going to be easy. But when we first came up with the plans in dealing with this issue, it was us against the outsiders, but now it's us against us. And so we have to deal with this. Suggestion in regards to social events, make sure you do keep it small. Try not to actually have social events during the COVID-19 period. If you test positive, make sure you isolate. Make sure you quarantine. Make sure you keep yourself busy by reading or knitting or crocheting, or if you have a hobby of carpentry, do it. Get on the internet. Watch your symptoms. Monitor yourself. Monitor your temperature. And watch your taste and smell. And eat healthy. Pray. Call your friends. Talk to them. And friends, call people who are positive. Reassure them that you have your back covered. Ask them if they need help. The product is available. Our number is 842-2384. Call your tribe. See what they can do for you. See what information they can share for you. But get involved. The city's working on a mitigation plan right now. Our tribe met, and they're going to submit comments regarding the mitigation plan when it is up. But by all means, make sure that we continue to be safe. And thank you again, KDLG and the city and the health department for doing all we can, and with the Bay Area Health Corporation. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's great words, Tom. Thank you much. Sorry, I jumped in there again, Tyler.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I'm done.
No, that's all right. Are we ready to start taking questions from the public?
Yes, sir, I believe so.
All right, yeah, let's open that up.
We're open for public comments now.
Do we have anybody who is ready to comment?
I have something that I could add. This is Andy Fraley.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, did a trip in Anchorage. There was medevac in. And while I was coming back from Anchorage, I noticed several areas of contamination and cross-contamination with passenger belongings. At the Anchorage International Airport, Alaska Airlines coming out here. Specifically and exactly, I saw out-of-state hunters deplane from a flight from Seattle, place 110 of them into the restroom, setting down their waterproof bags next to the urinal, and seeing a heat spray going all over from different parties onto these bags. They then boarded flights to the OEM. And putting them in the same overhead stands as people with young children in their diaper bags. Until you start decontaminating everything like we've done in the Philippines, they might switch to the system. Until that starts happening. So if you have the electrostatic decontamination, you gauge that to the airport, so if you start decontaminating this, we're never going to get a handle on this. We've done it elsewhere in the Philippines. We will not at home as a completely eradicated COVID-19 by following. and then, you know, high street dollar occasion, wearables and controlling. So it can be done, but you need some significant resources and some significant personnel and the right solutions, and that just completely don't have them right now. And there's no one doing anything about the people. I mean, there's a really bad heroin addiction problem. And there are resources now they can do the Suboxone over the telephone with the teledoctors and that kind of thing, but they do need to
we were going to go ahead and have Izzy read out the call-in number real quick, if that's okay with you guys.
Hey, everyone listening in, thanks for tuning in. And you can call 888-392-4560 to ask a question of the panel. The code is 57103. Again, you're calling the city call-in number. It's 888-392-4560. The code is 57103, and you can call in to ask a question of the panel that we have right here on 670 AM. So I'm going to go ahead and ask Lori, do we have any other members of the public who want to ask a question right now?
Go ahead.
Hi, I just have a question. Do you guys have any updates about the school for kids on the case for cases, what's going on in town?
Hi, this is Gina. Could you repeat that, please?
This is Thomas Gardner. I just had a question about any updates on the school with the current cases going on right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's first and foremost in our mind, and we're working on that. Yeah. We don't have any concern for spread at the school.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. My name is Jim. I had a few questions. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Jim. You know, my question is that if being without health is really pressure, I know it's, but sometimes there's nobody at the hospital to do it. Maybe in the middle of the night, it's something bad, or it's infected, and that's going to be pretty, pretty drastic in some ways. That's one question, but in some communities, most of the day in Alaska, that have no one in water yet, that's an area, and you look at the spread could be really quick. You look at Queen has jumped up from 39 hours. That's not the end of that. I mean, you know, in February, March, when we talked about this, about the pandemic, I said, keep the fisheries shut. Stay out of this all day, but I guess that didn't happen. Look where we're at now. I mean, so all the state, if the fisheries happen, Bristol Bay in 2020 ain't going to be forgotten for it helps spread the virus out, and people coming in, look at Top River, how much people in Anchorage are affected. So there's so much, I'm disgusted with it, but, all of our people are under fear and whatever for pretty much nothing. I mean, they should have just kept the state shut down until we get the handle on this rather than now where we're at. The numbers aren't coming down. Look at the statewide over 100 for the last 10, 15 days. I mean, I'm not trying to put anybody down or anything, but, if next season, if we still have this pandemic going on, I tell the public that people are really considering keeping this fishery shut. That's how That's how the virus came into Bristol Bay and other states. It wasn't here. It wasn't in Dillingham in February, March, was it? It wasn't in Cleveland. But it came from someplace. So figure that out. Have a good day. Thank you for having me come in anyway.
Hey, Jimmy, I'd be happy to respond to that a little bit. This is Gina. And you're right. You know, I think that ultimately we don't know exactly how everything spreads, but we do have a pretty good handle on understanding that it can take, you know, 2 weeks from the time that you get exposed until you can possibly be infectious. So we don't think that the virus has been hanging out here for months and months and months. But, you know, it's not impossible, and that's why we're really working on encouraging folks to just be focused on taking care of themselves with the masking and the social distancing and the hand washing. If you're staying 6 feet away, keeping your social bubble, just your intimate household as really the only folks that you interact with without a mask, and this means wearing a mask at work. You should wear a mask when you're working with your coworkers. Because we don't, you know that the spread doesn't occur that way. So we do know that it does, and so that's why you would wear a mask. But there's a lot of things that we're learning, and we don't know everything about this virus, and maybe Dr. Ben Dixon would want to add just a minute on something about that.
Yeah, thanks, Gina. I was also going to respond to what your concerns were, Jimmy, and I think, that what Gina has outlined is basically exactly what I was going to present. I think that the fisheries and the canneries that opened up this past season, they had a lot of isolated cases, and that's true. But I do not believe from a medical standpoint that those cases are at all related to the cases that we have currently been seeing over the past couple of weeks. I think that the patterns that consistently change with regards to case counts locally here in Dillingham and within our within the Bristol Bay area, I think it's just really important reminders for us to do all of the things that we've all been preaching to everybody and that everybody knows. And I think the most important thing is to take care of yourself and your own social bubble, to make sure that you're keeping yourself and your family safe. There are a lot of external things that we have no control over as individuals, and so I just want to kind of echo those recommendations: wearing a mask, washing your hands frequently, you know, remaining socially distant from others, and those are going to be the best ways to prevent yourself from getting into a high risk exposure situation.
Yeah, thanks, Gina, for your answer. I just want to emphasize, too, that what both of you are saying, I sure would like to see some of these cities and villages, people who have backlogs of no running water. That's one of the most safeguards that you can do is to wash your hands. So some of them don't have running water, and their water can shut off. So, if there's cities out there who could turn their water on to some of the villages, some of the people who have them shut off or overbuilt until this pandemic is over with, then I think we're leaping ahead. And that's one of the things that we need to do. Some of the, a lot of the villages don't have any water, and I could name about a few hands for you or more, so it's not over with. So thank you very much for this.
Yeah, thanks. And I just wanted to mention one other thing. This is Kira Bendixson again, Jimmy, with that comment. That's a really good point to bring up. I think that a lot of people may not have awareness of that reality. So I appreciate you bringing that up. I would also encourage potentially those tribal leaders within the villages and communities that don't have running water, that it may be worthwhile to reach out to BBAHC and see if we might be able to assist in getting some hand sanitizer for you, if that would be a better alternative. I'm not suggesting necessarily that BBAHC is going to supply everybody with an endless amount of hand sanitizer, However, I know that all of the tribal entities did receive CARES money, and that may be something that we may be able to help help get for you guys.
This is Gayla Hansakonia. I just do have a question of, like, what are the total, and maybe I missed it there at the beginning, but what are the total number of cases, active cases that we have in Dillingham? I've seen the BDHC statements that came out, but it's just confusing as whether or not we have two cases from yesterday or three.
We have two active cases from yesterday.
Okay, and it just is a little bit confusing on your guys' Facebook page and when you guys update information, but how many active cases do we have in Dillingham, and how many cases have recovered? I think that would be helpful for the community to know how many cases we have in town.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gayla, for your comments. We can have, I can touch base with the BBHC IC team, and we can look at revamping what is the way in which we're currently reporting numbers.
Okay, thank you. And I think the obvious thing that we can see here, what's coming about us, is what we should be doing is requiring negative tests before people get on an airline to enter into Dillingham or Kingston, and we were talking here about Dillingham, but that there's a negative test result that they have to have in hand before they get on the plane, and not wait 14 days while you're in quarantine or do the 10-day, 3-day and get tested. That negative test needs to be in hand before anybody gets on that plane, and we should be holding the Alaska Airlines accountable for making sure that we have that for safety precautions. Alaska Airlines offering free or $120 rapid testing for people going to Hawaii, and that goes on to the next point is that we do need to have rapid testing available to get out of quarantine, and then also to have rapid testing available and not wait 10 days to get test results back, because people can't afford to be in quarantine for, 20 plus days. So we got some real problems here in town.
Do you want me to take that, Kira?
Yeah, sure. And then I'll add on anything. Sure.
Okay. All right. So thanks very much for the question, Gayla. This is Gina. When we obtain a test, it's only for that moment in time. And that's not to say that people who have become cases in Dillingham didn't come with tests that were negative. So it wouldn't really behoove us to require that, because there's a 14-day window from when a person has exposure to when they might turn positive. And once a person does test positive, then we recommend that they're not tested for at least 3 months. They go through a 10-day isolation, and then they're allowed to be out of isolation, because studies have shown that viral shedding can occur to continue to make a test persist at being positive, but that the virus is no longer viable and it's not multiplying in the body to be able to be infectious to other people.
Yes, thanks, Gina. This is Kira. I could not have said it better myself, so thank you for fielding that. The one thing that I did want to add to what Gina has mentioned is really just to reiterate the fact that a negative COVID test, as I mentioned before, can give us a false sense of security. The reason for that is what Gina very nicely just outlined, is that it can take up to 14 days for somebody to become positive. So if after they've been exposed, and so if you get a COVID test and it happens to be negative, you may just be within that incubation period whereby you're not going to test positive. I think that this is also a very important point to bring up. In the setting of our two positive cases yesterday, So people, once you are identified as a close contact of a known positive person for COVID-19, this is also the reason why we are not recommending you to get a COVID test right away. And that has to do with that incubation period again. So if you were to be exposed, say yesterday, one of the positive cases, there is no indication, there wouldn't really be any benefit of testing you for COVID-19 today. And the reason for that is because, again, you would be within that incubation period window where you have been exposed and maybe have the virus, but you don't have a high enough viral load in your nasal passageways to be able to detect a positive test yet, but you still may be infectious. And so this is why the current recommendation, if you're a close contact for a known positive COVID person, is to get testing within 7 to 14 days after the exposure.
Hey, Gayla, this is Todd Larson too.
If I just give follow up to that, I mean, you know, for the peace of mind for people coming here into the Bristol Bay communities, I think that we really need to advocate for a negative test before you get on that airplane. I understand about the incubation period for 14 days. There's a lot of people right now with what's happening is there's a lot of fear that's in the community, and we need to be able to have rapid testing available so that if you do have symptoms and so that even if you might be not having the virus yet, you have that peace of mind that you're negative at this time. Those people who are home right now are probably in fear wondering, oh my God, am I positive? Am I, you know, just some, you got to think of everybody's mental health here. So I guess that's just my two cents, but I really want to advocate for testing before coming into Dillingham. Just like it was, you had to have a negative test before entering the state of Alaska when the state of Alaska opened up for people to come here. And I think that that would be the smart thing for us to do is to advocate for that. Thank you.
Hey, Gayla, this is Todd Larson. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, just to answer part of that other question about the active tests and or the active case. I briefed the council on Monday nights, and now it's every other Monday night on that. I've been reporting those numbers in my report since probably the end of March. So we could track how they've gone. Right now, with these two cases, we've had 30 cases total. That and I include. On my numbers, I include all of the ones that happened here in Dillingham. So all those icicle cases and things, I count them in my numbers. And that's because it actually occurred on our ground. And it's a little bit different, but I wanted the people to know what has actually happened here. So we have 3 active cases, and we've had 27 recovered cases.
Thank you.
This is Jack. I'm a junior calling in. I'm not sure the protocol to ask a question. I called in a little late.
Ask away.
Well, here it goes. Gayla touched on it a little bit. And my question is the mental health fallout from this for adults and students. As far as I know, the mental health aspect is not covered by IHS. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my understanding in most cases. Behavioral health is not covered. And then second thing I wanted to point out, I don't know who this question would go to, it's more of a statement, is the 14-day mandatory quarantine, it's proven to work. No doubt it's proven to work. And it works for people that have jobs that once they come back are allowed to work from home. But it doesn't work for the people that don't have the ability to work from home, the people that might unexpectedly get medevaced and then come back into Dillingham and have to take their tests and sit on their hands for 14 days, and that person's not getting paid, and then we have a financial and a mental hardship put on that person. Again, that was more of a statement, but if I could get an answer to my first question about the mental aspect, mental health aspect, mental health fallout, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, so Jack, this is Kira Bendixson. I appreciate you talking about the complexity of the complications and the complexity of quarantine and how that can have economic, emotional, mental health impacts, because very often that is something that we don't talk about, and I think it's very, very important. I don't really have a solution for it, but I just want to acknowledge that it is complex, and that's why making some of these recommendations is hard, and making some of these decisions is challenging, because there's always going to be two sides of the coin, sometimes three or four, and so we're all kind of keeping all of these things in mind as we make recommendations and make decisions. So thank you for bringing that up. The second piece is, you are correct that IHS does not cover behavioral health or mental health services. Bernina Benoit has taken over incident command here at BBHC. She also works in the behavioral health department. So I'm going to let her maybe just speak a little bit about what potentially some additional options may be through our behavioral health service here at BBHC.
So they're not covered with IHS funds, although everyone is welcome to call the on-call. And during the day, you call 842-1230, and after hours, you just call the hospital, and the ER will take their information and have the on-call provider call them back. So those are the available to everyone in the public at this time. There are several other resources available throughout the state and nationwide that people can call at no charge, and I can grab that information and maybe provide it in a little bit.
This is Gina, too. Thanks so much, Jack, for bringing that up, because I think that as a community, we need to try to figure out how we can support each other. And one of the things that's really a concern is that people may feel hopeless. And so there's a little acronym called PQR, which stands for Persuade, Question, and Refer. And so if you can get people to talk about how they're feeling, especially if they're considering something as drastic as a suicide, that there's been proof to show that can help reduce that incident. So PQR, persuade, to talk about it. Q, question, you know, what would you do? And then R, refer. And there is the Alaska Care Line, and I have that number, and it is 877-266. And then the last one are the numbers for HELP, help, which is 4357. Thanks again, Jack, for asking.
All right, thank you. Just a quick follow-up. I hope by me throwing it out there that everybody on the listening in and also on the panel will keep that at the back of their heads, that we have to, as we're navigating through this, we have to consider the mental health of our community and the mental health of our students. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Simpson. I have a question. Maybe if I didn't answer, I joined late.
Go ahead.
Okay. We're going to deliver to whoever it is, the rapid chat wrapper.
while I was in the hospital, because sometimes I'll go to the hospital and I'll say, rapid test and see if something. So when people come in for the person, they want to, because they have to wait just over a week to get a test result back. And I think that's just not a good thing. I mean, they have to wait for a time, they have to wait to get out of quarantine. So once they get the 14th day, we should provide them a rapid test rather than waiting 10 days, 5 days for results.
This is Gina, just really quick. It was kind of hard to hear because your phone was a little bit garbled, so I'm not sure who that was. But that is a tough thing, because once you get a test for COVID, you should pretty much be in quarantine until you have the result, right? Because if by chance your test comes back positive, then, you know, the folks that you've been around in the previous 2 days prior to a positive test are folks that could have been exposed through you. So our recommendation has been, once you test, you stay in quarantine till you have your negative result, and then that result is just good for that point in time. So I just wanted to add that in there. But your question about trying to have a rapid test be a rapid test is a good one, and there are just lots of issues.
You know, the government has said that they don't have a rapid test on it, so how are they going to pull that out?
This is Kira Bendixson. Sorry, I'm having a really hard time understanding what this caller is saying, so I apologize for that. But I do just have a couple of comments about rapid testing as a general commentary, I suppose. Rapid testing is something that is actually very difficult to obtain across the country anywhere. And I say that more just for background information. I am not in disagreement that having access to a rapid test when you need it is important. The reason for rapid tests can be varied by individual in terms of maybe needing it to clear them for an important medical appointment or needing a rapid test because they're actually demonstrating symptoms consistent with COVID. That being said, there is a supply of rapid tests for those indications. However, if somebody wants to come in to get rapid tested just to be cleared from quarantine, that's not a thing. And that's also not an indication for a rapid COVID test. And so so I hear the frustrations on a regular and daily basis with regards to access to rapid testing. And I will say that the incident command team here at BBHC is going to be working closely with Capstone at the airport and the city of Dillingham, potentially also the Huron tribe, a big collaborative effort and attempts to see what the possibilities will be about getting rapid testing up at that airport site in the near future.
Hi, this is Jenny Bennett. I have a question.
Go ahead, Jenny.
Hi, I don't know who this is for, Gina or Dr. Bendixson or the city. I just kind of wanted to know, maybe touch on it, or maybe if it is out there, when the community will kind of get an update on, yes, the numbers, but I saw, I think a while ago, that the city had a kind of same category of low, medium, and high risk, and I guess with these new cases, I'm kind of just wondering if we're still at a low risk category, or if we're going to be getting more information on that, or what number we have to hit the community spread, kind of things about that. I know Gina touched on that we're not, you know, concerned about the school yet, but when will we be, and how many numbers do we need to get to move to different categories?
Yeah, so I'm happy to start that one off. This is Kira Bendixson. Thanks, Jenny, for your question. It's a very good one, and it's actually a topic of discussion that our internal incident command team discussed earlier this morning. So I think, you know, what we've all seen in the community is that we've all come together and done a great job of preventing COVID from coming into Dillingham and into the Bristol Bay region as a whole. And I think the two cases that occurred yesterday have forced us now to transition into a different mindset. And I think part of that transition is I just totally lost my train of thought.
From low, medium, or high risk. I think that's where you were going.
Yes, that is exactly where I was going. Thank you. So at this point in time, it's difficult to make that change today. But I think that because of the two positive cases yesterday and the potential for such a widespread exposure, I think we'll know a lot more in the next week or so. That being said, we do not want to be reactionary, right? We've all talked about wanting to be prepared. And I think that this week is part of that preparation of changing levels, potentially, if we have the development of more positive cases. Those are my initial thoughts to your question.
And this is Gina, and we'll be definitely evaluating that as we continue to do contact tracing and outreach people for this particular event. I think that people need to consider that if they did attend a social gathering this week, if they've been around folks that have traveled in from out of town, that they should just maybe self-quarantine if it's possible to protect themselves, but also protecting the community. This could be quite far-reaching, and again, it just goes to the point that, you know, we're in this together as a community, and that anything we can do to help each other is probably just going to support us in the long run. So more to come.
Thank you for that. And so Sarah, you were really interrupted by someone not muting their phone, but so would that information come from both the hospital and the city?
Yes, that would. And I don't know exactly what the avenue of that distribution of information would be, whether that be a press release or whatnot, but the incident command team in terms of medical advisory is working very closely with the city of Dillingham and the tribe. So we would be sure to work on figuring out a succinct way to get that information to the public.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you for the question, and thank you for having this panel.
Well, this is Craig. Is this okay to speak?
Yes,
go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you guys talking. I appreciate KDLG and everybody being here, and I appreciate you talking about viral load and testing how quarantine is important. I think that there was been questions about the exemptions for critical infrastructure service workers and quarantine, and maybe you guys could speak a little bit to that and how important it is for critical infrastructure workers to quarantine and also co-quarantine for family members as well, and talk about like what it means to co-quarantine. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, so I can probably start that one off, Gina. So thank you, Doug, for your question. I think that this is something that is that has been brought up quite a bit. There has also been some concern about, you know, quote unquote, abuse of the critical essential worker exemption, so to speak, from quarantine. And what I can say, you know, internally at the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation is that we have jurisdiction over the employees that work at BBHC. And so for our internal policy or procedure with regards to quarantine is that obviously, if an employee is positive, then they isolate, and everyone in their household should attempt to be isolated from that individual if it's possible. If if it's not possible, then similar to what we've all been saying with regards to public health and quarantine, is that they would still be required to quarantine the household members if they're not able to isolate. So that's something that we've discussed internally at BBHC, but in terms of, you know, if there's a family situation where somebody has tested positive or had a high-risk exposure that's out in the community, you know, the advisory team at Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation can only really make recommendations. We can't enforce anything because, again, our jurisdiction is only for our employees here at BBHC. So I think you bring up a really good point. Essential workers are, you know, essential workers, and if they need to be at work, it's important that they maintain social distancing while they're at work as best as they can. Obviously, making sure they're always wearing their masks and frequently using hand sanitizer or washing their hands. I think that is an important thing to emphasize with regards to those essential workers.
Hey, Karen, this is Todd. I'd like to add too, you know, this has been a challenge from the first day that the state produced that list because it was a very large list of exemptions. We were pretty hard on it to start with and not allowing a lot of that to happen. And we still don't approve of a lot of it. But the point you made about folks cheating or stretching the truth, so to speak, that does happen quite a bit. So I think the term that Richard has used at the EOC and we've used from the beginning is it essential travel or not? I mean, that was part of one of the state health mandates too. You really got to ask, you know, if I'm talking mostly to the businesses, like the corporations here, BBDC, the city, although if you don't really need that work done, then it's not a good time to do it. It's not essential. If it's nice to have stuff, push it off. We've pushed off a number of things till next summer because we don't want to bring extra people in here. So I just ask on this show and any of the businesses, typical bigger businesses, if you don't have to have someone coming in here, think about that and then just reschedule it because that's some of the simple things we can do to keep extra folks out of here. Some of the essential stuff, you know, my example is what one of the Nooshinghak needed to bring in a person from Anchorage to fix the cell tower, you know, and that was in, you know, there was a necessary fix. And, you know, that's something we couldn't lose. And we can't lose that piece of critical infrastructure. So they, you know, Bob Armstrong called me up, say, hey, what do we do? Just go to the work site, go do your business by yourself or keep yourself separate and then go back to your motel room or wherever your bed and breakfast you're staying and just be mindful that, you know, treat it like you have it and then go home. And we appreciate your business. So, again, that's a group effort as well.
And this is Gina. And if folks do need to travel, and of course we do have instances when we need to travel to Anchorage for medical appointments and other things that are really important, when we return, then we really need to look at quarantining for 14 days. If you have children in school, you should not be quarantining where you have children in school. I know of somebody recently that had to travel to Anchorage and they had to stay apart from their household because they didn't want their children to be pulled out of school and missing school. And it is trying and it is difficult. And so we do want folks to reach out and say, I can't do this. How can I make this happen? And that's what we're here for, is to help support you and to figure out a way that it can work. Because if we're in quarantine, then we are not becoming infectious potentially and exposing those that we love who don't know that they've been exposed and then go on to expose others. And this is really where the spread comes. So it's just difficult. And thank you guys for everything that you're considering and all that you're doing.
May I make another point? The critical infrastructure work system to go to work does not allow you to go to the grocery store or go other places. It's only to go to work. And so if you travel in, you still have a 14-day quarantine, but only to go to work, so you're not supposed to go to the grocery store. That's my understanding, and I may be wrong on that, but I hope that somebody can clarify that.
You are correct, Greg. Yeah.
Yes, you are 100% correct there, Greg, and I just want to say that again loudly and clearly for everybody. So if you are an essential or critical worker and you are on what is called a working, quote-unquote, working quarantine, that means that the only time you are able to break your quarantine is to do whatever your critical work is that needs to be done. So you come to work, you do your work, you go home. So you still do not go to the grocery store. You still don't go to the hardware store. Call in your groceries for delivery. Have people pick stuff up for you in town and drop it off on your front doorstep. Thank you so much for reiterating that, Greg. And wear a mask at work.
All right, is that all for us today?
This is Tiffany. I'd like to say something, if I could, really quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
I thank you guys for clarifying all of this information. It's just so much, and it's a lot. I know that people are asking and they're talking about mental health. I do want to say that I understand the danger of COVID, and I know that it can kill us really quickly, potentially, if we had community spread. But I do want to say that there are other things right now that are killing us much faster than COVID. Things like domestic violence, just like interpersonal violence, and then addiction. And with the difficulties of everything that, and the difficulty delivering services, like it's really complicated to figure out how to get help right now for mental health. I truly don't know, even for myself, what options are available right now that are practical, that are usable, that are useful for me. But like, I just wanted to say that like reaching out to and talking to people that you trust, but that you feel safe around. Like, don't discount that, and don't be afraid to do that. Reach out to people who you feel safe around, genuinely, like, good and safe. So that was all I wanted to say. Thank you so much.
My name is Margaret, and I'd like to put in a comment, please.
Yeah, sure.
Hi, Margaret.
With all of the confusion, with all of this conversation, I would just like to emphasize the importance of the businesses in town, allowing us to do curbside delivery. My understanding is that Bigfoot is not allowing us. I mean, they're saying, no, you cannot just call in an order. You need to come into the store. I just would like to emphasize about the importance of, for 30, 40, 50 years, cat businesses have endured in this town, and it now seems to be that they're barely enduring. But maybe we could do, like, incorporate into the cat businesses a lot more deliveries into town. Keep their businesses going. Bigfoot is telling us all, no, you cannot just call in an order if you're in town. We want you to come into the store. That's like, it's kind of those kind of things that we need to put a stop to help us to do our part, because there's a lot of us out here trying to do our part. And if the business is in town, and it's, I mean, you're seeing gravel people do deliveries. bag loaders doing deliveries, but a lot of the other low maintenance deliveries, which are the groceries and the things in town that we need to have come to our door. There are people that are going above and beyond for us, but it needs to go a little bit farther. Bigfoot is a big essential business in town, and I think that they need to work with us a little bit more and not be telling us, you need to come in and shop. Just let us do these low curbside deliveries. It means a lot to your business. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to the safety of us. And that's just what I wanted to put in. I appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.
Thanks, Margaret, for that. I guess I can't really speak to that for sure, but it is something to consider, and hopefully somebody from Bigfoot is listening. I was kind of wondering, Todd, if we could just go over what the city's recommendation is for entering the community, like our mandate. Can we just have that expressed one more time?
You're talking like when people fly in, what they're supposed to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I can't remember who was talking. Like Gayla was talking about a test. Obviously, you know, if you could get a test in Anchorage, that'd be great, because that is some information to get on the plane. Make sure, you know, on the plane. I just had a discussion with Dr. Ben Dixon and about that. And the plane is probably one of the worst places that something like this can get transmitted. So. You know, make sure you're wearing your mask. If you have any other protective items, heck, you can even wear rubber gloves, whatever it takes. Make sure you clean up after you're leaving the plane and do the best you can with that. Before you travel, we still have the travel form that you need to fill out. And that's online, and it's actually very simple. Where you're going to quarantine, who you are. You know, what's your address, that kind of stuff, so we can help the tracers in the end get the quality trace on a person. And you have to have one to enter the community. Once you get here, what we want to move to, I think we're going to move to at some point, is that it's going to be a 14-day quarantine and you're not going to be able to test out of that because of a lot of the things that that Gina and Dr. Ben Dixon have been pointing out about the testing process and being a snapshot in time. So a 14-day quarantine is the thing. I mean, that's what we really got. I've heard it so many times. So that's what we're moving towards, and that's what I would recommend to anyone and everyone that does that. If you can't, because you're an essential worker, then, you know, like we were just talking, you got to take a whole lot of precautions and just act like you have positive inside of you, and you're trying to keep it away, but just from everyone else. But you still have to work. If you operate a grader, then, you know, go jump in a grader, go do your business, and then hop out at the end of the day and go home, and have someone else, you know, pick up groceries and stuff. Again, it's just thinking about those little things that is going to help the community quite a bit.
Yeah, Todd, I just wanted to add a couple additional things. This is Kira. So one is about testing out. This concept is testing out of quarantine. So that is something that has also transitioned at higher levels. The state of Alaska, as well as the CDC, is no longer recommending a test-based strategy to get yourself out of quarantine. They removed that probably over 4 weeks ago. I don't remember the exact date. And so I just wanted everyone to know that that's not just something that's happening potentially here in Dillingham, but that's actually a national guideline and recommendation. The second piece that I just wanted to emphasize is that currently the way, and Todd, please correct me if I'm wrong, currently, the way that the city ordinance is written with regards to quarantine is that there is a way to test out right now. And the way that you can test out is having two negative COVID tests 10 days apart. And one of those COVID tests needs to be completed after 72 hours of arrival in Dillingham. But it still requires a period of 10 days in between the two COVID tests that are both negative. So I just wanted to clarify that because I've heard a lot of different renditions of that, and I've heard a lot of different interpretations of that, but that is currently what the ordinance states.
Yeah, and that's like we talked, of course, that's what's in consideration right now. I don't believe that the city council wants to continue that, but you know, they want to make some changes to it. But there's changes to come.
Yes.
Todd, if I could add a couple comments here, I would like to point out that some of the comments in regard to testing, I know that is a big concern of the tribes, and we have our staff looking into ways of improving that and see how we can contribute so that there are more rapid tests in this community. But once we find out and our staff has done the research, we will let the public know about that. In regards to mental health, you know, as I had recommended that people reach out to friends, reach out to your pastor, your preacher, reach out to folks that will listen to you in addition to mental health counseling. But definitely, it's been a very good conversation, and thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, that's exactly right. Tyler, is there anybody else?
Yeah, unless there's any more closing comments, I think we're okay to close out.
This is Gail. I just have one more thing. And, you know, we need to identify maybe places where people could stay if they need to isolate away from family members. I think that we have very limited housing options here in Dillingham. And what options do we have, or where can people stay, maybe for the people who haven't traveled, putting them in bed and breakfast, or other types of venues, but we can't just say you got to go stay somewhere. Housing is already pretty tight in this town.
Yes, Gayla, that's a good point. This is Kira Bendixson. All I can say about that at this moment in time is that I know that the incident command team is beginning discussions, brainstorming discussions with regards to different options for convalescent housing.
Hi, can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dr. Bendixson, or Gayla. I'm not sure if she was done. Should I go ahead?
Yeah, I think you're okay. Gayla, did you have anything else to say?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think Tyler asked us, comment about wrapping this up, and I'll go back through the panel, and you guys can just a few closing words. Thanks for listening to us today. We'll do another one of these in the near future. Just we're trying to keep the public informed, and it's good to ask those questions and get the answers, because there's so much information out there, and there's so much false information out there. So be careful what you read on Facebook and what you read on the internet. I mean, if it comes from, you know, CDC or something like that, or medical opinions and things, that's great, you know. But if you have questions, you know, just ask and we'll figure out answers. But I just wanted to inform the public, keep everybody as close to the truth and information as we can possibly get, as we keep digging for
for information and trying to keep everyone safe. Dr. Ben Dixon?
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I just wanted to, I know we're getting ready to wrap up. I just wanted to give the last individual the opportunity to say his comment. I didn't mean to cut him off.
Thanks, Todd. This is Malcolm Ray. I had a couple comments and maybe some questions in there. I really appreciate the hard work you and Gina and our team manager and Tommy and everybody else has been doing on this, trying to keep things open, trying to have these things. The thing I wanted to talk about was I understand that we are trying to be careful about not shaming people, and I'm certainly on board with that. But I think we've leaned too far in our fear of HIPAA and the like, in that, frankly, I think for laymen, a lot of there isn't much reality check, or there isn't much, if they're not directly exposed themselves to family members and the like, they don't really have much of a sense for what's going on. You know, we've got these recent cases being reported, but it's always so big, and I understand that there's a good reason to protect people's privacy, but I also think it's incumbent on the community to really put a high priority on protecting each other in terms of not shaming, as somebody said earlier. I'm currently at home on quarantine because I answered an ambulance call for a woman in respiratory arrest, and I foolishly did not adequately protect myself. I didn't have N95 immediately available, and I didn't wear goggles, so I'm considered to have been exposed. We did a team of six EMS volunteers, and two police officers were involved in attempting to resuscitate a woman for more than for at least 20 minutes, more than enough time to be exposed if we weren't adequately protected. And I think something that is probably going to come out slowly, very slowly, you know, with these reports from the hospital, is that this occurred in a house full of 20-somethings who were partying together. And that's what 20-somethings do. That's what I did back in the day. But bottom line is, one of them at least was positive, and now many more may eventually show positive. And so I think just to really reinforce the idea that, yeah, we got to be careful about people coming into town, all that, but there's a huge risk in here right in town and in the party culture, which is part and parcel of the mental health issues that people are talking about. I mean, it's all, again, I'm not trying to change it. I'm just trying to say what it is. And this has been my fear as an EMT for quite a while, is that in a party house, we're going to have a mass infection, and maybe that's happened now, because that portion of our population is such a weakened state in terms of their mental health and self-destructive behavior. Anyway, I could go on about that, but I guess I just really appreciate what everybody's doing, but I do think we're shooting ourselves in the foot when we're being too discreet by half in describing these incidents. Frankly, this neighbor, I've been an EMT as a volunteer and as a paid medevac EMT for, I don't know, too long, since the 80s. And if the health corporation chooses to fire me for opening my mouth, then so be it. I think this is just something that needs to be more out in the open for people to understand how this affects. I feel like we're only presenting a portion of the picture of how this is affecting people, and I also feel like, maybe I just lost my train of thought too. Anyway, that's probably enough. Thank you all.
Yeah, thanks, Malcolm, for speaking up about that. I think you do paint a very realistic picture of the realities of how COVID can affect anybody. And so I appreciate you sharing that information. What I will say is a distribution went out to EMS and to the police department just with regards to some additional PPE to ensure that everybody is protecting themselves, especially as first responders. That is very, very important. And as we had discussed last night with the EMS responders and with the police chief, it's important for all first responders to ensure that they have either their N95 or their KN95 on, that they have adequate eye protection, which includes goggles and or a face shield and gloves. I understand and recognize that a gown is not always something that can be donned, especially for our officers. However, ensuring that you have an N95 and or KN95 covering your nose and mouth, as well as eye protection, which includes goggles and or a face shield, as well as gloves. Those are important for keeping yourself safe as a first responder. And so we just want to make sure that you guys are adequately supplied to ensure safety for yourself. So I wanted to share that that has been distributed. And also, Malcolm, just thanks again for sharing, you know, some of the realities of the complexities of COVID and how it really can affect every aspect of people's lives.
Mark, I didn't in any way mean for...
I guess I'll just take it, since I started with the closing remarks, I'll just take it from here to Tyler. Dr. Ben-Dixon, do you have some closing remarks for the group and the radio show here?
Nope. All I would say is keep up the good work, everybody. Attempt to practice patience with all of us as we navigate these waters is very challenging. But you all are doing a fantastic job, and we just need to stick it out and keep our guard up and remain vigilant. Wear your mask.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Ben-Dixon. Gina, how about you?
I don't think I have anything else to add. I just really appreciate everybody's attention and taking the time to listen. So thank you.
Tom, do you have any closing remarks for us?
I just want to thank all the people that called in and gave suggestions and asked questions, because this is all new to all of us. I mean, back in January, we wouldn't even have been thinking about having a conversation like this. But we've come a long way. We've got a long ways to go. And it's going to be open discussions like this is how we're going to all get through this. So thank you all that called in, that asked questions, that had suggestions. And thank you both the health corps and the public health nurse in the city.
Thanks, Tom. And it's the same to you. It's I love having you on here with your insight and advice and your wisdom. I learn something from you every time I listen to you. So thanks for the passion for all the people. And that's what I want to pass on as a final comment, is the reason a lot of us or most of us do public service is because we have a passion for people and doing good things for people and taking care of people and making sure that we do the best job we can. And I can assure you that, you know, that every day we wake up and try to do that every day. And hopefully we get there most of the time. And this is one way that we just want to do what you want us to do. And we want you to be safe and healthy and happy. That, you know, that's really our drive as public servants. So thanks for the time. And thanks, Tyler. I'll turn it back over to you and Izzy and you two. Appreciate you opening up the mic for us. Maybe we'll do another one here someday in the future. I've got some ideas. Bring on Dr. Ben-Dixon here after we get a chance to talk.
Great. Yeah, thank you, Todd, and thanks to the panel and everyone who called in today. Before we go back to our regular programming, I want to let everybody know that we will have this live broadcast on our website this afternoon, and we will have it posted to the KDLG website and on our Facebook for people to listen to again later or just in case you missed it. But thanks, everybody. Thanks for putting this together, and we appreciate your time.
Information at rwbaird.com.
Okay, we are on our way out, but here is your end of the week moment of economic context. A quick follow-up to the interview I did a couple of days ago with Eva Price. She's a producer on Broadway. You might remember, did the Oklahoma revival last year, has an Alanis Morissette show going, or had anyway, until things shut down. And I had asked her when we talked how she's getting ready for when theaters eventually reopen. And it turns out she's going to have a little bit more time to figure it out. The Broadway League said today it's going to stay dark until at least the end of May of next year, 2021. Okay, now we're really leaving. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a good weekend, all right? This is APM.
Many people who are in recovery will tell you that they use drugs to feel better, and they quit using drugs to feel better. Anyone can become addicted to a drug, and anyone who is